We're holding in Megillah on page 16 at the top, middle of Oys Tes. The Megillah begins with the words Vayhi b'me'ach HaShveirish. Amr Rab Levi v'itemer Rab Yochanan or Rab Yonasan, Dover zeh mesoras hu b'yadenu me'avisenu me'anshe k'nes sagdoyla. We have the following mesora going back to the Anshe Knesset Sagdola, Shekol Mokum Shenema Vayehi, whenever the Pasuk begins by saying Vayehi, which literally just means, and it was, Eina Ela Loshen Tsar. It's always a Loshen of Tsar. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, because you have the word Vayehi stands for Vay and He. Vay and He are both expressions in Tanakh used for woe. So Vayehi is a combination of those. And there are various other explanations as well. One of them being an interesting one is, after all, we know how does it, the word yehi would be, it will mean, would mean it will be. The vav makes it into and it was. So we're talking about, in other words, this is something where there's something that's yet to be. And the person says, oy vey, I wish it already was. I wish it was already in the past. And therefore, vayehi is the kind of thing that I don't want it to be yehi. I want it to be vayehi. I want it to be already over and done with. So therefore, it's a loshen of tzach. And we have some examples. Vayehi b'mei Achashverosh, have a Haman. And then you have the whole trouble with Haman. Vayehi b'mei Shvot HaShoftim, Megillas Rus also begins with the word Vayehi, and right away continues in the Pasuk that there was a famine. Vayehi at the end of Parashas Bereishis, Vayehi k'heichal ha'odom l'roi v'apnei ha'adom v'gomer, when people started increasing in the world in the years before the Mabul, then you have Vayehi b'nei ha'lekim es b'nei sa'odom, the b'nei ha'lekim, the powerful people and the children of the Malachim and so forth, saw the human women and they were mezana with them and so forth and have a Mabul, and the result was there was a Mabul, or the other Girsa in the printed Gemara, Vayar Hashem ki rabba ro'a sa'odom, that Hashem saw that people are acting very badly and corruptly. So that's the Vayehi shows, in other words, that trouble was on, is afoot. In Parashas Noach, Vayehi b'nosam mikedem b'gomer, when they traveled from the east after in the 300 odd years after the Mabul, Havon Nivna Lanu Ir, and they said, let's build ourselves a city. And the result was the whole story of Migdal Bavel and everybody getting dispersed. Also, Mochama, in the days of Amraphel and the other four kings over there in Parashas Lech Lecha, then they made a war. And in fact, the Medrash says that was the very first war in human history, too. So it was a big tsar. Later on, it says when Yeshua was in Yericho, earlier in the Masechta, actually, it talks about that, first of all, it doesn't mean he was actually in Yericho yet. These psukim are taking place before Yericho was conquered, but it means he was actually in the area of Yericho shortly before the battle. And Vayisa Ena Vayari lifts up his eyes and sees, Behine Ish Omer Benegdo, there's a man standing opposite him, Vacharbe Shlofa Biyadoi, and his sword is drawn in his hand. Which earlier in the Masechta, actually on Daf Gimel, we'll get to it out of order eventually. But the Gemara explains over there that actually this Malach is coming to tell Yeshua off for the fact that they had missed bringing the Korban Tamid, and that they had now it's by night and they're missing out learning Torah because they're busy preparing for war. So we see, in other words, that the Vayehi means that there's trouble brewing, that the Malach is coming ready to attack. This Malach, by the way, also Rashi explains on the Psukim over there, based on Midrashim, that this was actually the same Malach we have in last week's parasha. Hashem told Moshe after the Chet Ego, I'm going to send a Malach to lead you, and the Jewish people are mournful about it, and Moshe says, absolutely not, I'll tell Elohim Mizan. Hashem finally, so to speak, changes his mind and says, fine, I'll lead you myself, and Moshe says, good, Imein Konecha Hilchem, I'll tell Elohim Mizan. This is what I've been wanting. So now, in Yeshua's times, the Malach comes back and says, listen, Moshe didn't want me along, but now I'm here in your times. So to lead you in battle. Anyway, but we see the word Vayehi shows that there's trouble coming. Another example later on, and say for Yeshua, Vayehi Hashem is Yeshua. Hashem was with Yeshua and he's famous throughout the whole world. But Vayimalu b'nei Yisrael, the very next thing is that one of the Jewish people had committed a trespass, had Ochan, had taken from the spoils of Yericho, and the result was that they lost the next battle, et cetera, et cetera. Later on, Vayehi Ish Echad Min HaRomasayim, the Pasuk mentions at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, begins there was a man from Ramasayim Tsofim, which was Elkanah, and a few Pesukim later, Ki es Chana Ohe Vashem Saga Rachma. He had two wives, Chana and Pnina, and he loved Chana more, but Hashem had closed up her womb, and she was barren for all those years. So there's also the Vayehi shows that there's trouble. So another example later on in Sefer Shmuel. Mostly, in other words, you can see we're going in the order of the Psukim. Ben Yehoyada wonders then in that case, why did it start first with Vayhi b'Me'achashverosh? We can understand because that's the pasuk we're darshining. Why then did it begin with Vayhi b'Me'ashvot Hashoftim? He says because once we're talking about one of the Megillus, then it makes sense to bring immediately a pasuk from another one of the Megillus as well. Besides the fact they both have this in common, both the story of the Megillah and the story of Megillah Surus both begin with tragedy and end with triumph. And in the case of Megillah Surus, that Rus marries Boaz and their descendants is David HaMelech, and therefore the Gemara put those first, and then after that it's going in order of the Pesukim. So next, Vayhi Kasha Zokin Shmuel, the Pasuk says when Shmuel was old, and the Pasuk continues, his children were not his sons, were not following in his ways, and that caused the people to ask for a king and everything that developed from there. Next, another one by David l'chol drachav maskil. Later on in Sefer Shmuel, that David was successful in everything he does. Vashem imo, and Hashem is with him. But you have the flip side by Shaul oyenes David. Shaul is jealous of David and constantly looking at him. Oyen meloshen ayin, he's constantly looking at him with a bad eye because he was jealous of his atzlacha. So we see that the vayhi means trouble. Another example from later on in Shmuel, Vayhi ki yoshev ha-melech b'beisoi, David is sitting in his palace and everything seems to be very peaceful and he wants to build the Beis Mikdash. And what is he told? Rak atal le'sivna ha-boyis. However, you're not going to build the Beis Mikdash. That's the tsar that comes together with the Vayhi. So you have many examples like that. And of course, there are many other examples that could be brought as well. Marshall gives another example, for example, before Vayhi Benosa Mikedim, the previous pasuk also begins Vayhi Chol Ha'aretz, Sofa Achas, Udvar Machodim. Everybody had one common language, but over there you could say that it means that it means they had sofa achas. It doesn't necessarily show that there's trouble afoot. But here we see that Vayhi Benosa Mikedem, they're coming to travel from point A to point B and to make themselves a city and all the disasters that happen as a result of that. So the Gemara is not going well. Vayhi b'Nesei Ha'aretz, and you could say it's only there because you have it in order to break up the Peronius. Right after that, you have Vayhi Ha'am Kimisonim. But anyway, the Gemara asks before we even get to that. V'hoksi Vayhi Bayim Hashmini. What about the Pasuk says, the Parsha Shmini begins, it was on the eighth day, V'tona, and we learn in a Braisa, that day was a tremendous simcha in front of Hashem, as great as the day when heaven and earth were created. And we know that because so just as much as there was a simcha on the first day of Ma'ase Bereishis, and you can say the simcha is all the greater because nothing negative yet had been created. Even for example, Gehenim, the Gemara tells us, was only created the next day. Machloikas was created between the waters above and the waters below was only created the next day. The first day is the Eibishter is still Yochid by Lama. It's a tremendous day of Simcha. And therefore we're saying the day that the Mishkan was dedicated was the same thing. Maushah, by the way, points out, so maybe the other way around. So why don't we say the other way around that since Vayhi Bayim Hashmini, as the Gemara is going to end up explaining, was a day of Tsar, then maybe it means Vayhi Erev Vayhi Voiker, there was also a certain Tsar. But Maharshal says, no, there's no question the day of the Chanukah Samish HaMishkan is definitely a Yom Simcha. It's described in the Shir HaShirim with the words, B'Yom Simchas Liboy. So therefore, so it shows that it was as great as the day when Shemayim Va'oretz were created. And the comparison is because then Shemayim Va'oretz were created, that Hashem wanted there should be a world. And Hashem made a world brought into existence the same way by when the Mishkan was built, then it was like a miniature world over there, that now there's a place where the Shekhinah can come back down to earth. And therefore, it's a day of tremendous simcha. And it says, Vayihi. The answer is Hoshchiv Nadav Raviu. After all, Nadav and Aviu passed away, so it wasn't an unadulterated joy. There was a tsar in it. Okay. The Gemara says, what about Vayhi v'hoksiv, Vayhi b'shmonim shana v'avim eshana v'tzeis b'nei Yisrael? What about when the Pasuk is describing when the first Beis Mikdash was built, and it starts off with Vayhi in the 480th year of Yetzias Mitzrayim, as they started to build the first Beis Mikdash? And another example, Vayhi v'hoksiv, Vayhi kasha ro Yaakov as Rachel as Lavan Achim, when Yaakov saw Rachel, then he watered the sheep, and then so forth. And Marsha says, okay, there you could say that maybe there's the fact that she's barren, like with Chana, but the difference is with Chana, it mentions that she was barren, that she was infertile right after Vayhi Ishechad. It's almost like the next, it's like the third or fourth pasuk after it. Here you have many psukim from when Yaakov meets Rachel before he finds out that she's Akara. So therefore, the Gemara is not assuming that one has anything to do with the other. And what about Vahoksi Vayhi Ere Vayhi Voika Yem Echad, Voika Sheni, Voika Shlishi? You have the each day of Maisa Bereshis, it says Vayhi. And there are lots of Vayihis. Yeah, like you said, Vayihi ben Sayaharan. There was lots of Vayihis. So we can't say every single Vayihi means Tzar. Now, there is, by the way, in the Medrash, there isn't a Medrash where Rabbi Shmuel says that without exception, and he infers each one of these. He says, for example, even the days of Maisa Bereshis, for example, you have. After all, the Eibishter didn't create things completely and perfectly made. We human beings have to work on perfecting them. So in that sense, there's a certain degree of Tzar involved in that. With Vayhi Bayim HaShemini, the Gemara itself said about Nadav and Avihu, and with each of these other examples, he finds there is taka something that there is something that it's not 100% joy. There's some degree of tzar in it. But here, the Gemara is not assuming that. Ela Amar Rav Ashi, Kol Vayhi Ikahochi VeIkahochi. When it comes to the word Vayhi by itself, then yes, you can have sometimes one way, sometimes the other. Sometimes it means tzar, sometimes it's just the style of the pasuk. Vayhi kol vayhi bimei vaday loshen tsar. But when it says vayhi bimei, as it does at the beginning of the Megillah, then there's no question that it's a loshen of tsar. Now, why is that? What makes vayhi bimei to be more of a time of tsar? So one idea behind it is that Iyun Yaakov brings an idea. What do you mean vayhi bimei in the days of first of all, there's the point that so Marsha says the point because the word vayhi then is extra. If the Megillah had begun bimei Achashverosh, it would mean exactly the same thing. So why does it have to say the vayhi means that it's a loshen tsar? So when it says vayhi by itself, maybe you don't have a choice. You have to phrase it somehow. You have to say it happened. But when it anyway says bimei, there's no reason for it to say vayhi, and therefore we can say the vayhi is taka vay, and he is a loshen says a loshen tzar. Iyun Yaakov makes a different point, which is, what do you mean vayhi bimei Achashverosh? Only Achashverosh was alive. Millions of people were alive at the time. Why davka are you attributing the years to him? So rather, what it is because he was a Rosha and was saying trouble comes along with him, because together with a Rosha comes trouble. So therefore, in other words, that's why we're saying Vayhi Bimei. It was specifically in the days of this Rosha when the trouble came. So the Gemara says, so Vahavu He. Now, five times in Tanakh, you find the expression Vayhi Bimei. So let's go through them. Vayhi Bimei Achashverosh, Vayhi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim, that we said before from the beginning of Megillah Sirus, Vayhi Bimei Amrothel, the third one we quoted before about the four kings. The fourth one is Vayhi Bimei Ochaz. It was in the days of Ochaz, who was one of the kings of Yehuda, who was one of the biggest Rishoyim among them. And the fifth one, Vayhi Bimei Yehoyakim, who he was also, he was the third to last king of Yehuda, and he was also a notorious Rosh. So what's the special tsara that we find in each of their times? So Marsha over here refers to Targum on Megillas Esther, which gives some of the details. So it says like this. When it now obviously you can say in each one, I mean, for example, Vayhi B'mei Amrothel, there was a war, that's a tsara. With Vayhi B'mei Shvayt HaShoftim, there was a famine, that's a tsara. But still, it's more than that. It's not just that. I mean, there's been lots of wars, there's been lots of famines. The vort is like this. Each one of these was a unique kind of tsara. And the Medrash go, the Targum and Medrashim go through them like this. The Vayhi B'mei Achashverosh, of course, there was the fact that all the Jewish people are being threatened with extinction, Rahman al-Islam. Vayhi B'mei Shvayt HaShoftim, the problem is not just that there was a hunk, that there was a famine. The problem is, as the Gemara and the Gemara elsewhere mentions, that it was a dersh, a shofet, a shoftav, that they were judging their shoftim. The shoftim themselves were corrupt, and therefore that if a shofet would tell somebody you're doing wrong, you have to correct yourself, then he would say, Tel kodim ben shinacha, you yourself are no better. The Medrash actually puts it a different way. The Medrash brings it rather that the vote was they were shofet as shoftehim, in the sense they had no respect for their shoftim. If the shofet would try to punish somebody, then they would go and beat him up. So that was the Vayhi Bimei. That was the terrible tsara, that they had no respect for the shoftim, and therefore then how are they going to ever correct themselves? And the Medrash gives a mashal about it, like you have a king sends ministers or messengers or whatever to a city, and the people beat him up. The Chachamim among them are going to realize now we're really in trouble. So that's the Vayihi B'mei Shoreid HaShoftim. The Vayihi B'mei Amrafel, again, is more than just a war. The Medrash mentions in Bereshis Rabbah and various other places, these four kings, they're not just, I mean, if you look in the simple meaning of the Psukim, what you have is, you know, they had ruled over the cities of Sodom for a while, and now these cities had rebelled, and therefore they're coming to fight against them. The Medrash says a lot more to it than that. These kings had in mind, there's one person in the world who's spreading knowledge of the Eibishter, Avram Avinu. So let's go to war. Let's draw him into the battle. We'll end up killing him because, after all, we've got the mightier armies. And then that's it. His whole thing about the Eibishter, about one Eibishter and all of that, will go extinct. So that's the Vayihi B'mei that they had in mind to do such a thing. Therefore deserves the word Vayihi B'mei. The Vayihi B'mei Ochaz, so the context of the Psukim over there is saying that the army of Aram and the army of the Aseres HaShvatim are trying to besiege Yerushalayim, but again, the Medrash sees in it, there's something much deeper. Ochaz, the Gemara mentions, the Medrash mentions, that Ochaz closed all the shuls and all the Bate Medrash and outlawed learning Torah in the kingdom. He had the famous expression that the Medrash says. He said, "Im ein doyim me ein tiyoshim." If there are no little kid goats, then there will never be any grown up goats. Meaning, if I can prevent the kids from learning Torah, then there will never be any adults who know Torah, and chas v'shalom, the Torah will be forgotten. So therefore, that's the Vayihi B'mei. That was the terrible tragedy. So not just that now, right now, they happen to have a war out of many of thousands of wars that have been in Jewish history, but rather this attempt of his to prevent the children from ever learning Torah. So that's that. And the Vayihi B'mei Yehoyakim. So first of all, Maharsha says, in his times, the Golus and the Churban already began. In his times already is when Nebuchadnezzar first conquered Eretz Yisrael and made Yehoyakim his vassal. And then afterwards, when Yehoyakim revolted against him, then Nebuchadnezzar came and invaded Eretz Yisrael and took Yehoyakim captive, and he died on the way, etc., etc. So in a sense, the Churban and the Golus already began in his times. But the Medrash also mentions the point that we have. One of the things that Yehoyakim did was, in his times, it says in Sefer Yirmiyah, Hashem told Yirmiyah to write out Megillas Eicha, or rather to dictate Megillas Eicha to Baruch ben Neriah, and then have him bring it to the king and his ministers and read it to them, and it should shock them into actually doing tshuva, realizing what's going to happen if they don't. And then the Pesukim describe how when it was actually brought to Yehoyakim, he wasn't impressed. Not only he wasn't impressed by it at all, but he ripped the whole thing up and cut it up and threw it in the fire. So then again, the Medrash says, imagine you have a king who sends a new law to the country, to a country, to a province in his kingdom, and they rip the whole thing up and so on and so forth. You can imagine in how much trouble they're going to be. So therefore, that's the Vayihi B'mei. That was the terrible tsara of Yehoyakim's times. So those are the five times when it says Vayihi B'mei, and we're saying definitely Vayihi B'mei means tsar. As far as Vayihi, it can mean tsar, it can mean not, depending, Rav Ashi says, on the circumstances. Okay. Since we mention a Masoda, since Rav Levi or Rav Yochanan or Rav Yonason had mentioned a Masoda that we have from our ancestors about Vayihi as Loshen Tsar, so now the Gemara digresses a little bit before getting back to the Megillah to talk about other Masodas that we have on things from our ancestors. Omer Rav Levi v'Tamei Rav Yonason, Dabazem Masodas Ubi Adenim Avasenu, Omets V'Amatzia Achi Havu. Omotz, who was the father of Yeshaya, and Amatzia, who was one of the kings of Yehuda, were brothers, which makes Yeshaya, therefore, nephew of King Amatzia and a cousin of the later Malchi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, "My Kamash Malon, what's the point of that? What is Reb Levi or Reb Yonason informing us by that?" He wants to tell us, "Ki hoda Amr Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni Amr Reb Yonason." He wants to tell us that you should understand this based on what Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni says in the name of Reb Yonason. Kol kala she tsnua beveis chamia, a kala who is tsniastik in her father-in-law's house, as we're going to say that Tomer was zoicha v'yotin mena, malachim and neviim, she will have the schus that malachim and neviim will descend from her, menolon mi Tomer, and we can learn that from the story of Tomer. Dichtiv vayireha Yehuda, when she's play acting over there as a zoina in order to be able to have children with Yehuda. So the pasuk says vayireha Yehuda, vayachsheveha lezoina. Yehuda saw her sitting by the crossroads over there, and he thought she was a zoina. Ki chisasa faneha, because she had covered her face. Now what's the logic? Mishum to chisasa faneha vayachsheveha lezoina, because she's covering her face. He thinks she's a zoina. Adrabba, a zoina would not cover her face. She wants people to see her. Ella, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Mishum Shekisa Pneu Bebeis Chamia, because previously she had covered her face, she was always tzniastik when she was living in Yehuda's house, when she was married to Er and then to Oinon. anvil, I have a yodala. Therefore, Yehuda never recognized her Laficha. So now when he sees her sitting by the crossroads, and Marshan, so to add, he refers to it over here, that now he sees all of a sudden a woman sitting there with an uncovered face. He didn't even chapsich that it could conceivably be Tamar, because he always knew that she was theistic and she always covered her face. Now, because she has to play act as a zona for the story over there, then therefore she's uncovering her face. But he didn't even chapsich. And the result is Laficha Yotzim and Malachim and Nevi'im. Therefore, kings and Nevi'im descended from her. Malachim mi David, the kings descended from David HaMelech, or Nevi'im may Omitz. And we have, where do we see that Nevi'im descended from her? We see from Omitz. Because Omitz himself was a Navi. How do we know? So where do we see that Omitz himself was a Navi? The Omer of Levi, Masoras be Adenim Avasenu. This goes back. Now we understand what Rav Levi is saying, that Omitz and Amatzia, Omitz and Amatzia are Ach Yavu, Uchtiv Chazon Yishayov and Omitz Ashachoza. We know that Omitz is the father of Yishaya, and B'chol Hecha, Dekori B'Novi, Shem Oviv, whenever a Novi is mentioned with his father's name, Kaimalon, De Oviv have a Novi Kamoiv, Hoya Novi Kamoiv. Then we know that that means that indicates that his father was a Novi as well. So we have some Nevi'im where it says only their name, but we have some Nevi'im where it mentions their father's name as well, and that's meant to indicate that their father was a Navi as well. Therefore, we know that Omitz was a Navi, and therefore, so we see that Nevi'im in plural, Omitz and Yishaya, both descended from Tamar in the schos of her tznius. Marsha points out, I mean, the Gemara didn't have to do that. Dovid and Shlomo are also Nevi'im. Later on in the Perek, it's going to mention the 48 Nevi'im, and Rashi gives a list of them, and it includes Dovid and Shlomo. Fine, but they're not, their main role is not Nevi'im. Their main Nevi'im is, their main role is as kings. Yeshaya and Omitz, their main role is as Nevi'im. By the way, Ben Yehoyada points out, so okay, that works for Tamar, for example. In her time, there was no kingship yet. In her time, there's no Nevuah yet, the Nevi'im of the Jewish people are going to come only later. Therefore, it's possible for them to descend from her in the future. What about, for example, nowadays? Akala is going to be Tzniastik. She's going to be Zoicha V'yotzen Menem Malachim and Nevi'im. How so? So he says, because after all, listen, Malachim includes also Rosh Yeshiva, Man Malchi Rabbanon. You find many times where Rosh Yeshiva is described as a king. In a Geras Reb Shura Gaon, for example, when he wants to say that so-and-so became Rosh Hashiva in such and such a year, he uses the expression Molach. And Nevi'im can also refer to Tamer HaChachamim, Chocham Adif Minavi, so therefore it means that she can have the schos that such people can come from her. Anyway, the point is, that's the importance of knowing that Omotz and Amatzia are brothers, and therefore that tells us that Omotz and therefore his son Yeshaya are descended from Tamar, and that tells us what Tamar's reward was for being tzniastik when she lived by Yehuda. What Nevuah Omitz said, by the way, I mean, like many Nevi'im, we don't, the Gemara mentions later in the Perek, there were over a million Nevi'im, and we don't have most of their Nevuahs written. In the case of Omitz, actually, so it does mention, in Divrei Yomim, it tells the story how at one point Amatzia, with his army, fought against Edom and defeated them very soundly, and then the Pesukim describe how Amatzia was Nichshol on Avodah Zarah. He brought back, it says he brought back the statues of the Getchkes of Edom and started worshipping them. Why he would do such a thing, one explanation is because he figured after having killed so many Edomim, he figures maybe the Malachim, Sorim, whatever of Edom are angry at him, and therefore he has to appease them. Whatever the case, obviously he's not allowed to do that. And a Novi, it says in the Pasuk, comes and tells him off for it, and then Rashi, I think, brings over there from a Medrash that Novi was none other than his brother Omitz. So in that case, we have one Nevuah of his. The Amun of Levi, Rav Levi says another thing, Dovaz and Masoras Biadenu Mavisenu. Here is another Masora that we have from our ancestors. Mokim Orin Enim in Amida. The space that the Orin took up in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was not actually part of the measurement. Meaning, the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 by 20 Amos. The Orin is 2.5 by 1.5 Amos. But if you measured from each side of the Orin to the nearest wall, you would find 10 Amos as if the Orin wasn't there. So it took up space and didn't take up space at the same time, because it was within Teva and Lamailam and Ateva. The Altadeva talks about at the end of the first Chelik of Tanya, because the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the first Beis Mikdash, where there was the Orin, is direct from the Cholos of Atzilus, and therefore it's not Tofus Mokim, as opposed to in the second Bais Mikdash, it's in the Slavish and the lower Olamos, etc. Tanya Nami Hachibilun, similarly in Ebraisa, Orin, Sha'osa Moshe, Yeshle Esther Amos Vachoruach. The Orin that Moshe made, you have 10 Amos in each direction, because the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 by 20 Amos, and you still have 10 Amos in each direction, because Uchtib, and Psukim say, V'lefnei Advir Esrim Ama Orech, in front of the dvir, where the dvir sometimes means the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself, but sometimes it means the wall that's separated between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. As we learned in Masechta Yoma, in the first Beis Mikdash, there was a wall there, an amah thick, that separated between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and sometimes in the Pesukim, that wall is called the dvir. So the Fnei HaDvir would mean in front of, meaning beyond that dvir, there was a space 20 by 20 amas, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Siv, and the Pasuk says, Knafa Kruva Echad Eser Amos, the wing, now you had there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as we learned in Masechta Yoma, besides for the Kruvim that were directly on top of the Oren, built into the Kaporis that Bezalel had made, besides that, there were two oversized Kruvim made out of wood, plated with gold, that stood on the floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and their wings went across the entire Kodesh HaKadoshim and covered over the Oren and the Kruvim that are on top of the Kaporis. And the Pasuk says, Ksiv, Knafa Kruva Echad Eser Amos, or Knaf a Kruva Echad Eser Amos. So each Kruv's wings were 10 Amos. That's not actually the way that's not actually the exact words in the Pasuk, but it's close enough. It's paraphrasing the Pasuk. So if the wings took up 20 Amos, Oren Gufa Hecha Habakoi, where would the Oren have room to stand? Elalav Shmamina Benes HaYomid. Obviously, that shows that it was standing there Benes. The truth is actually the Turei Evan says that maybe this pasuk doesn't belong here in our Gemara. In Bava Basra, the Gemara deals with that. The Gemara says that the bodies of the Kruvim were there b'nes, because if the wings took up full 20 amos, where would there be room for the bodies, assuming the bodies were between the wings? But over here, that's not really relevant. We're talking about Mokama Oren. You could say, very simple, the Oren is under the wings. It's not the wings take up 20 amos, and the Oren is underneath them. So it's not really relevant over here, he says. Okay, but in any case, we see that the Oren did not take up space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Getting now back to Megillas Esther, Reb Yonason posach lapischa lahai parshasa mehacha. Reb Yonason, when he would start darshaning on Megillas Esther, he opened up this parsha with the following pasuk. Now the Gemara is going to go on. We're going to learn over the next couple of days many psichdis like that. And you have, in fact, if you look at Medrash Rabba on Esther, also on Eicha, you have many psichdis like that. You have it was a common way of doing things. The Chachamim, when they began a drosha on Megillas Esther or on Megillas Eicha, they would begin the drosha by quoting a pasuk from a different place in Tanakh, which therefore that helps us illuminate and helps us literally, a psichta is an opening. It helps us open up and understand a new dimension of the Megillah that we're going to learn now that we otherwise might not have realized. In a way, it's kind of similar to the way a mimer will begin with a pasuk or a mimer chazal or something. A mimer chassidus will begin with a pasuk or a mimer chazal, where it'll be explained in the course of the mimer. Whatever is explained in the mimer will help illuminate what that the deeper meaning of that pasuk. But the pasuk serves as kind of an introduction to get into the topic of the mimer. So the same way the pasuk that Reb Yonason is in quote, and that all the other chacham are going to quote over here, helps give us an entryway into understanding the Megillah on a deeper level. So the pasuk says the Yeshaya has a nevuah again about Bavel, about how Bavel is going to be utterly destroyed, and he says the expression "Bekamti aleihem ne'um Hashem tzvakos," I will rise up against them, says Hashem. V'hichrati levavel, I will cut off from Bavel shame, a name, usha'or, and a remnant, v'nin, and v'nin, the word nin can actually have a double meaning. Rashi points out that it means a loshon of memshala, of kingship, of rulership, and also it can also mean a son. V'neched, and a descendant, ne'um Hashem. So says Hashem. So I'm going to remove all those things from Bavel. So what does that mean? Shame, zehaksav. When it says that Hashem is going to take away their shame, that means their script. So Rashi explains their script was not their own. They had borrowed a script from a different nation. So now Hashem's saying that script is going to go extinct and nobody is going to be using it. In fact, Kachava, you find all the ancient Babylonian inscriptions were written in something they call nowadays cuneiform, and then that became extinct. Eventually people stopped using it. Nowadays, you have experts that know how to translate it, or at least they think they know how to translate it. But anyway, so that shame is gone. Shame zaksav ushor zaloshin. When he says shor, that means their language is going to go extinct. Now Tosfos says, what are you talking about? The language of Babel is not extinct. The language of Babel is Aramaic, and the entire Gemara is written in it. Tosfos says it doesn't mean the language of the common people of Babel. The Tosfos is not printed in here, it's printed in the Gemara. But Tosfos says we mean the particularly royal language. The royal elite in Babel had a language and a script of their own, and that, Hashem is saying, is going to be destroyed along with the kingdom of Babel. Sort of like, you know, in later times, for example, you have many European countries, they spoke French as their royal language, even when their national language is something else. So this is what Hashem means over here. How does Shem and Sha'ar come to mean the script in the language? Marsha says like this: when we have human beings uniquely are able to communicate with people not only close by but also at a distance because you can write to them. So therefore, so you have so Hashem is saying Shem refers to the Ksav because how do you know this is so and so's writing? He signs his name to it. Therefore, the word Shem refers to a writing. And Hashem is saying that that's going to become extinct. Sha'ar is also, besides that it means a remnant, the word Sha'ar also suggests closeness, like the word She'er, Kim the She'erai HaKorev Elo. So that refers to speaking, where you speak to somebody close by, and that means the language that they use to speak to one another, their royal language, as Tosfos says, is going to go extinct. Then he continues, V'nin zem malchus, the word nin refers to their kingship, their rulership is going to be destroyed. Rashi explains that like you have in Tilim Yinoin Shmoi, which means that his name will be renowned and he'll rule. So Rashi gives several other explanations where we see that the word Nin means rulership. Marsha says also the word Nin also means a son, because after Belshazzar, that's it. Belshazzar had his party over there, and then that night Belshazzar was killed, and then no more of his sons or descendants ever ruled again. So that's the Nin. V'neched zavashi. And when it finishes off, that the Neched will be destroyed, that refers to Vashti, who was the last remnant of Nebuchadnezzar's family, and she was killed, and that's the end of that family. So therefore, so now Rabbi Yonason used that pasuk as an introduction into the Megillah, that we realize how, in the events of the Megillah, how all of this came true, and how even Vashti, the last remnant, the last scion of Nebuchadnezzar's family, was destroyed. There are drashim, by the way, that point out the Targum on Megillas Esther points out that she was the one who was all the time was convincing Achashverosh, don't allow the Jews to rebuild their Beis Hamikdash, and that so therefore she got what she deserved, and we're going to have later on in the parak that she ended up getting stripped and getting executed on Shabbos, and she was making Jewish girls work on Shabbos, as we're going to talk about later. So she was an out and out Rishanta, and she came from a family of Rishoyim. Then Yehoyada, by the way, points out there's another nuance in Rabbi Yonason using this as a psichta to Megillas Esther. He says, you know, later on, the Gemara is going to ask a question. Given that the Jewish people were guilty of serious averus, they had bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue and they'd eaten from Achashverosh's suda, why taka? That explains why the Ebishter brought the gzera on them. Why taka did the Ebishter overturn it? The Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's Talmidim asking, "V'chimase ponim yesh b'davar? Does Hashem show favoritism?" And then he gives an answer over there, which we'll get to. So anyway, so Ben Yehoyada says, this psichta is kind of meant to answer the question as well. Why does Nebuchadnezzar deserve, and his dynasty deserve such a harsh punishment? Because they destroyed the Beis Hamikdash? The Nevi'im have been saying for years that he should destroy the Beis Hamikdash. No, because Nebuchadnezzar forced the Jews to bow down to a statue. Well, therefore, that gives a limud zchus on the Jewish people. Because they were forced into it, therefore, they only deserve that the Eibishter should put a gzera on them, lefonim, as the Gemara says there on Daf Yud Beis, that Hashem should pretend that he's going to destroy them, but not actually follow through with it, and therefore this psichta helps explain that point. The Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni posach lapischa lahai parshos mehoch. Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni opened up his drosha on the Megillah with the following posach. Posach says, we have it in Haftorah of fast days, instead of the natsuts, where the simple meaning of natsuts is a type of thorn bush, instead of that, instead of berush, which is a cypress tree or some other chosh of a kind of tree, will grow instead. The sachas for Gomer, and the pasuk continues, the sachas a sirpad yala hadas, instead of a sirpad, which is another kind of thorn bush, instead of hadas will grow. So what does that refer to? Tachas a natsuts zahomon arosha. The natsuts refers to Haman, where we know that Haman made himself an Avodah Zarah, which, by the way, the Gemara mentions that, we're going to have it later on in the Perek, that Haman had an Avodah Zarah on his chest, and that's one reason why Mordechai didn't want to bow to him. But actually, the Gemara in Sanhedrin mentions that Haman declared himself an Avodah Zarah. So he actually wanted, when he wanted people to bow to him, it's not Stam as he's the Mishnah Lamelech, it's because he wanted that people should actually worship him as a god. So he made himself into Avodah Zarah. And we know that the word natsuts can refer to Avodah Zarah, dichtiv, as we have a posik in Yeshaya, of chola natsutsim of chola nahaloyvin. The posik is talking about how Sancheirav and his army are going to invade Eretz Yisrael, and they're going to camp out everywhere, including in all the natsutsim and all the nahaloyvin, which the Gemara is understanding that those are places of Avodah Zarah. Maharsha wonders, actually, all the temples of Avodah Zarah. Maharsha actually wonders why. I mean, the simple meaning of Natsutz over there also means that they're going to camp even in the thorny areas because they're going to be their army is so gigantic that they're going to have to use even those areas for army camps. But nevertheless, the Gemara's understanding over here that Natsutz and Nahalo are places of Avodah Zarah. Then Yehoyada points out the word Natsutz can be broken down. You rearrange the letters into Naatzav. Now, Naatz means he's stuck. And Tzav means a commandment, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when it talks about Shev Mitzvot Bnei Noach, mentions that the word Tzav hints at Avodah Zarah. When it says, Vaitzav Hashem Alekim, that Hashem commanded Adam not to eat from the Eitz Hadas, it also includes he commanded him about Avodah Zarah, because that was one of the mitzvahs that Hashem gave Adam Rishon. So therefore we see the word Tzav is connected with Avodah Zarah. So here, Haman stuck a Tzav, he stuck an image onto his clothing, and therefore Naatzutz can refer to what he did in terms of Avodah Zarah. Anyway, so we're saying instead of him, Yala V'Roish, instead of him, the B'Roish tree is going to grow, Zemorcha Yatzadik, Shinikra Roish Labesom. That refers to Mordechai HaTzadik, who can be called B'Roish, which is short for Roish of Beis of the Besom. Shenemar, we have in last week's parasha, Va'atakach Lacha Besomim Roish, Mordor, Hashem tells Moshe, take the chief or the most important of the spices, and the first one is Mordor, pure myrrh, where there's different opinions among Rishonim what myrrh is exactly, whether it's musk or myrrh, but whatever it is, Umtagumin and Meira Dachya. Targum Unkelus on the words Mordor is Meira, is the Aramaic word for myrrh, and Dachya, which means pure, and from that comes the name Mordechai. In fact, the Gemara in Chulin mentions that there we have a remez to Mordechai in Torah Shebichsav and in Chumash. So we see therefore that he's compared to Besamim Roish, the chief, the most important of the spices, and therefore that we're saying Biroish refers to that, the Roish of the Besamim. So instead of Haman, the Natsutz, instead is going to come the Biroish Haman. Instead of it's going to come the Biroish Mordechai. And when the pasuk continues, for sachas ha-sirpod, instead of the sirpod, so again, the simple meaning of sirpod means, Maharsha, by the way, points out, when you get down to it, Mordechai has other names as well. He's also called Psachia. He's also called Bilshon, because like we talked about the other day, he was an expert in languages. So why in the Megillah does it call him specifically Mordechai to show his importance that he's like the chief, that he's the chief, like Mordechai is the chief and the most important of the spices. So therefore, that's why the word Barosh specifically refers to him. So Vesachas HaSirpod, when it's said instead of the Sirpod, the thorn bush, Zu means Tachas Vashti Harasha, Bas Benoshan of Nochamnetzer Harasha, where she's the descendant of Nochamnetzer, Shesoref Beis Marfido Shalavakenu, or Rafidas Beis Hashem. The word Sirpod we're understanding as an acronym for Soraf Rafidas, which means he burnt the resting place, the Beis HaMikdash, so to speak, the resting place of the Shekhinah, Rafidase Zahav, like it calls it in Shir HaShirim. In particular, you have the place of the Kapodas, where the Shekhinah rested on that, and he, Nebuchadnezzar, went and burnt it, so Vashti, who continued in his ways, is called Sirpad Meloshin Soraf Rafid. And instead of her, Yala Hadas, instead there grows a Hadas, Zu Esther HaTzadekas, Shenikas Hadassah. She's called Hadassah. She named by He Omen as Hadassah. He Esther Basdoda. She's called Hadassah. Uchtib. Vehu Omed Bein Hadassim. We also find a pasuk in the Novi Zechariah where it says Hashem is so to speak standing among the Hadassim, where the Gemara in Sanhedrin means that it explains that refers to the tzaddikim. So we see that Esther, being a tzaddikus, is compared to a Hadass, and her particular name was Hadassah. So Vesachas Hasir, but Yala Hadass refers to that instead of Vashti, she's going to be supplanted and she's going to be removed from her position, and instead Esther is going to take over. So again, we said before there was the point that he also forced the Jews to worship Avodah Zarah, but the very fact that he burnt the Beis HaMikdash and that Vashti continued in that way, and she's convincing her husband Achashverosh to not allow it to be rebuilt, it shows that it wasn't just that they did it because Hashem said so, it's because they had their own agenda against it. So the source of Mordechai's name is from Aramaic, it's from Meira Dachya, yeah. Then the pasuk continues. That same pasuk, the Tachas Anatz with Yala Barosh, Vesachas Asir, but Yala Hadas continues. V'hoyol Hashem l'shem. When it continues, the pasuk says it will be for a name, for a famous thing for Hashem. Elu, you may put him. That refers to the days of Purim, which are going to be established as a result of all of this. Or different gear says Zum Mikra Megillah, that it refers to the Mikra Megillah. where Marsha says that Girsa is preferable. The name of Hashem is not mentioned in the Megillah, but we say the brachas before and after it. There we mention Hashem's name. So therefore, L'shem, Hashem's name is mentioned in connection with the story of the Megillah. And when it continues, the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, it'll be a sign forever that will never be cut off. Zem Mikra Megillah, or Elu Yimei Purim, it refers to Mikra Megillah, or the days of Purim, which are never going to disappear, as we learned before. So this whole pasuk, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani would use that as a psicha, as a psichta from Megillas Esther, that pasuk summarizes what Hashem accomplished over here by removing Haman and putting Mordechai in his place, and removing Vashti and putting Esther in her place, and that's how the whole thing of that, that's how we have the name and the fame of Hashem, and the eternal thing that will never disappear as a result of all of that. So one point is also the Rif points out, this helps explain why does the Megillah have to begin with Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh? Why does it have to begin with the whole story of Achashverosh's party? It should just begin with Haman becoming prime minister. The answer is we need to know the whole part about Vashti being supplanted, which happened as a result of Achashverosh's party, and Esther coming in instead, because that's the Pasuk is saying that was all an essential part of every Hashem putting everything in place for the nest to happen.
Was she a Katlanit, or does that not, or does it make
me? No, I mean, she wasn't. Yehuda thought she was a Katlanist. That's why he didn't want her to marry Shayla. But Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'olah, Gimel Adar Aleph. There's a letter of the Minchas Elazar that was recently reprinted. This is in Tavshin Dalet Mem, so it's not so recent anymore. But anyway, he writes very clearly and unequivocally that we need Mesiras Nefesh for Mashiach to come. So that Mesiras Nefesh has to be like the Mesiras Nefesh of Yehoreg Val Yaber. It has to be that degree of Mesiras Nefesh. Continuing with Halachas of Shabbos, you're allowed to put, if you have congealed fat, you're allowed to put it, congealed schmaltz, whatever, you're allowed to put it on hot food, even though it gets melted, because it was already basically it's an example of in bishul acha bishul, because it was previously rendered, and therefore now when you're cooking it again, it's not an issue. The Alter Rebbe may not agree with, it doesn't mention over here, but the Alter Rebbe may not agree with that, because the Alter Rebbe does say in Hilchos Rabbis L'Shabbosah that when it melts, then you do have a problem. Then we don't say in bishul acha bishul, and since of course the fat melts, then maybe according to the Alter Rebbe, there would be an issue with it. So according to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, apparently you would be allowed to put it on something hot, even though it melts. But according to the Alter Rebbe, like I say, maybe not necessarily. It's something to ask a Rav, I guess. Yeah.